Thanks, Ryan. So I'm going to talk today about low-power gradient approach to measuring N2O fluxes, mainly with using tunable diode lasers from Campbell Scientific. So this is really improving on some of the technology that we've been using at Campbell for a number of years. And I'd like to thank my collaborators, Claudia Wagner-Riddle, Shannon E. Brown, and Steve Sargent. So the motivation of this is really the flux gradient is a popular technique for looking at N2O fluxes, especially in multi-plot setups where you can use one single analyzer to measure N2O fluxes from multiple experimental plots. The one thing about these systems is that they're traditionally high power because they use high flow pumps. So we wanted to look at if you were able to move to a low flow pump, cutting significant power consumption, if you could do some type of remote operation of these systems where maybe you don't have AC mains power. So just really quick, looking at the flux gradient technique, you need to, so the flux of the gas equals an eddy diffusivity term times a change in concentration over a change in height. And typically you're going to do looking at gas concentrations at two heights and the difference between those. So the one thing about this technique is you have to develop this eddy diffusivity term, and so you can do that either by looking at some aerodynamic components or by using a tracer such as CO2 or temperature. And in this case, we did it multiple ways, but I used CO2 as a tracer in this particular experiment. So some of the advantages and disadvantages of flux gradient technique is that traditionally you don't need a fast response gas analyzer. You don't need to have the high frequency response. But they're commercially available now, so a lot of the systems that are running doing flux gradient are using high frequency response analyzers. Also, the single instrument that can be placed kind of in a center location and do gradients on multiple plots is an advantage. With some of the disadvantages being that there's some empirical assumptions that need to be made when you derive the K term, and if you incorrectly derive the K term, you can underestimate fluxes significantly. And then also you have to take into consideration the placement of your intake heights, because you could have basically the intake seeing a different footprint if you don't pay attention to that. So looking at typical system components, you would have two intakes, like I mentioned. In this case, we use a trace gas analyzer from Campbell Scientific that also requires a reference gas. You're going to need a pump, a sonic anemometer, or a cup anemometer if you don't have a sonic anemometer, some type of data acquisition, and then AC mains voltage is typically what you would need. So the methods for this particular comparison, we wanted to compare the low flow flux gradient technique up against an eddy covariance system. So we used two different TGAs at the site, and there was an eddy covariance system using a TGA 200A running a TE cooled laser with a single tube dryer, a scroll pump at 5 liters per minute, and a cell volume of 200 milliliters. We compared that to a TGA 100A running the liquid nitrogen cooled lasers looking at CO2 and N2O, so we could get a CO2 gradient to use as a tracer for our K term. And then also it was using a single tube dryer, but in this case we were using diaphragm pumps, and the flow rate was only 0.184 liters per minute, and the cell volume in this particular case was 400. So you can see we had significantly less flow on our flux gradient. So the intakes that we used in this case were our AP200 intakes that we use on our profile systems. So these intakes have a rain diverter, an inline filter with heater, and then also an orifice that sets the flow at about 240 milliliters per minute at sea level. And then we had a 0.75 liter mixing volume on those as well to knock down fluctuations. Prior to shipping these to Guelph, we set them up in a zero gradient mode where we put them next to each other and basically set a common intake on them, and then did an Allen deviation plot and looked at the 30-second point where they switch intakes. The system switches at 30 seconds to see if we saw any increase in the deviation that would be attributed to a bias in the intakes. And we didn't see anything like that, so we felt fairly confident that we didn't have an intake bias. So fluxes for the EC and the flux gradient method were both calculated using MATLAB with 30-minute time intervals, and then the K term, as I mentioned, was calculated both ways with an aerodynamic method, and then also using the CO2 gradient from the trace gas analyzer and the CO2 flux coming from our ergosonde. So here's an image of what the experimental setup looks like at the Elora experimental site in Ontario. And so that's kind of a zoomed out view on the left-hand side and then zoomed in on the right. And this was over corn. And so here you've got your ergosonde doing the CO2 flux and water vapor flux, and it has the built-in sonic anemometer. You have the heated vortex intake that brings in air for the system running eddy covariance for the TGA-200A, and then we had our two flux gradient intakes for the TGA-100A. So if we look at the results on power, I didn't list all the power on the right-hand side because much of it is the exact same thing. So the electronics and sampling manifold, they're going to be the same power consumption, but really the big one is the pump. So if you look at the traditional way of doing this, you have about a 950-watt Bush pump. And then we move towards using these other pumps, Edwards pumps and gas pumps together, one to provide the sample flow, one to provide the bypass flow. And those are going to add up to about 390 watts. So in the case of the low flow TGA system, we cut that down to 7 watts by using three diaphragm Parker pumps. So if you look at what that means as a total power savings, you can also look at cutting heaters. So if you can accept that you're going to have some increased noise from laser fringing by turning the heater off in the enclosure, then you can actually get down to 25 watts of total power for this system doing N2O flux gradient. If you want to have higher precision on your measurements, you can turn the heaters back on, and in that case, you're going to be up to about 90 watts. So the heaters do have significant contributions to that. Moving on from that, you can look at what that really means on the trade-off of turning heaters on and off. And so myself and Steve Sargent showed at Ag and Forest last year on a poster that you have about 0.055 ppb precision with the heaters on and 0.068 ppb with the heaters off. So it's a trade-off. The next thing we looked at was noise comparisons between the TGA setup to do low flow flux gradient and high flow EC. I chose a day basically where there was just background N2O, so nothing was really going on. And looked at LN deviation at a 1 second time interval, because that's what the flux gradient is using as a site average. And we see that with the low flow flux gradient, we had about 0.37 parts per billion for the LN deviation, and the high flow EC was around 0.33 parts per billion. And some of that may be the difference there could be due to the sample cell size you have on a TGA-200A versus a TGA-100A. Finally, with the results from the flux comparison, so in the pink is from the flux gradient technique with the K-term derived from CO2 as a tracer, and then the N2O from the eddy covariance is in the black. So you can see the flux gradient technique traced the EC fairly well. There are some points of anomalies there, and this has been cleaned up a bit by taking out periods of really low CO2 flux, so we don't have that contributing to the K-term. But there's still some other anomalies that are happening in that data set. Finally, conclusion is that we can configure a TGA system for low flow N2O flux gradient to operate at less than 30 watts if we shut the heaters off, accepting that you may have some additional noise from laser fringing and the optical bench basically flexing from temperature. And then if you look at the noise performance between these two techniques, we had a 0.37 and 0.33 ppb Allen deviation at 1 second between the two techniques. And finally, the N2O fluxes from the flux gradient system traced those of the eddy covariance system fairly closely, with some anomalies still occurring on the flux gradient when using CO2 as a tracer to derive the K-term. And with that, I'll say thank you.